Thanks for tuning in. Sorry our episodes have been a little delayed this summer, but with summer activities and travels and research projects and study abroad courses, it's taken a bit of time to try to sit down and collect my thoughts and pull together some interesting episodes. But stay tuned, the end of the summer is almost near, and we will have several interesting speakers being interviewed in the coming weeks. As you know, I like to focus a lot of my time and effort on being an optimist and talking about things that are possible, things that are being developed, and the progress we're making, especially as it's related to cereal grains and agricultural systems. Today, on the other hand, I want to take a step back and talk about something that's not quite so positive or uplifting, and for that, I'm sorry. But what is spurring today's episode is something that happened 2 days ago on the 17th of July. And as I'm recording this at the moment, it's the 19th of July. The question that I'm pondering this week is, how often is grain used as a weapon of war? Or maybe a broader question, how often is food used as a weapon of war? And the reason I'm thinking about this, I saw a headline in the New York Times today. Wheat prices spike after Russia escalates tensions in the Black Sea. So, as you know, Russia invaded Ukraine in February of 2022. And Ukraine and Russia together have a huge impact on the global grain industry and the global grain supply chain. So, I think it's important that we acknowledge that these kinds of things happen, and not just talk about the really fun things and really good things that are happening in the grain industry. So I do want to read a couple of sentences to you from this article, because I think it's really informative. So, as I said, this is from the New York Times, July 19th, 2023. I will put a link to this story in our show notes if you're interested in reading the entire thing, which I will not do at the moment. Russian forces will deem any ship in the Black Sea bound for a Ukrainian port as a potential carrier of military cargo, and their home countries will be considered involved in the conflict, the Ministry of Defense in Moscow said on Wednesday. In a significant escalation of tension in the Black Sea and a blow to Ukraine's ability to export its grain. Coming 2 days after Russia pulled out of the Black Sea grain deal, the declaration appeared to signal that Moscow would consider commercial ships to be legitimate military targets and the ships' home countries to be aiding Ukraine. While the statement did not say explicitly how the Russian Navy would respond to a ship bound for Ukraine, the statement will almost certainly deter commercial shipping. So, I think this, when I read the story this morning, it really hit me, because Russia and Ukraine play a really important role in the grain industry. So I'd like to share a couple of other ideas with you. You know, why should we pay attention to what happens with Russia? I think that's a self-explanatory statement. I think Russia plays a critical role in geopolitics for a variety of reasons, and they have for many decades. If we're going to talk about Russia, we also have to discuss the recent war in Ukraine, especially because of Russia's invasion, which began in February of 2022. It set off a wave of instability in the global grain markets. Some of you may be familiar with that, may have been tracking these. Some of you may not be. We should care about grain in terms of Russia and Ukraine, because together they produce approximately 25% of the global wheat supply and a very large portion of other cereal grains. Ukraine alone, at least prior to the war, was exporting approximately 15% of the world's corn and at least 10% of the world's wheat supplies. And because of this war, food prices, food insecurity, and starvation have been on the rise, especially in countries that are dependent upon these two countries as sources of food. According to the World Economic Forum, some of the countries that need the grain the most are also the most dependent upon wheat imports from both Russia and Ukraine. And these statistics, I think, are pretty staggering. For example, Somalia imports 100% of its wheat from Russia and Ukraine. Benin imports 100% of its wheat. Laos, 94%. Egypt, 82%. Sudan, 75%. The Democratic Republic of Congo, 69%. Senegal, 66%. and Tanzania 64% of its wheat from Ukraine and Russia. These statistics are really incredible. During the first 4 months of the war, all exports out of Ukraine ceased, which led to price spikes throughout the global commodity trades. And this isn't just wheat and corn, it's all commodities. Post-invasion, the UN and the government of Turkey were able to negotiate a Black Sea Grain Initiative, or the BSGI for short, which allows Ukraine's grain to be shipped out of a handful of ports on the Black Sea, including Odessa. But this required mandatory inspections of both incoming and outgoing cargo vessels, regardless of country of origin or destination. It was established in order to help meet the global grain demand by allowing commodities to be shipped out of Ukraine, primarily corn, wheat, sunflower, and several other agricultural products. So when we look at the statistics, 64% of Ukrainian wheat has been destined for developing countries, while 51% of its export corn has been destined for developing countries. So the Black Sea Grain Initiative has truly helped global commodity prices stabilize and to ensure food supply chains. Just last week, I was checking the statistics in terms of grain prices, and some of the commodity prices were actually below the pre-invasion levels, and this is on a global trade trade basis, and I found that really incredible. Well, not today. Today, wheat prices spiked 9%. I'm going to put several links in the show notes to statistics, and I'm looking specifically at statistics from the U.S. federal government, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Economic Research Service does a fantastic job of compiling statistics for agriculture, not just in the U.S., but for many countries. And they have some really interesting statistics. I'll post those notes for you. I'm also taking a look at Ukrainian exports by destination, and this is specifically wheat. The countries that import the most wheat from Ukraine include Turkey, the Philippines, Indonesia, Egypt, and Bangladesh. If we look at corn, the number one market for Ukrainian corn has been various EU countries, and then Turkey, Israel, Iran, Egypt, and China. So when we talk about blockading corn and wheat and other ag commodity exports, what we really are talking about is making the people at the who need the food the most, they're bearing the brunt of this war. And I think in terms of the long term, what is the impact going to be on many developing countries who have sourced their grain supplies from Ukraine and Russia? So I know this is not a happy topic, unfortunately, and there's no end in sight at the moment. But I do want to take a couple of minutes, and I will also put this article in the show notes. I ran across an article that was published in the Spokane Spokesman Review in July of 2022, so almost exactly a year ago. It's titled, When Food Becomes a Weapon in War. So I think it's an opinion piece, but I think it really speaks volumes to what we're talking about in this episode. So the article starts out, the phrase food as a weapon originated with a Soviet commissar as the Soviets weaponized food in 1921 against the class enemies that were coercively requisitioning Ukrainian grain to feed Russians. 2 million Ukrainians starved to death in the 1920s. So that's an episode in our history that many people think about. But actually, food has been weaponized by governments throughout all of history. And a couple of other examples that we might think about, Ireland in the 1840s. So if you recall your English history, England regarded Ireland as a colony. And as with all of its imperial subjects, the English viewed the Irish as people that were only civilized through England's paternalistic benevolence. So in the 1840s, about 5% of Irish land was owned by Irish people. The rest was owned by English people, the majority of which were absentee landlords living back in England. So this structure of land ownership and governance led to England importing or taking out of Ireland food supplies to feed the growing working class because of the Industrial Revolution. And that, coupled with the famine in 1848, led to approximately 8.4 million people in Ireland dying, all because of English policy. In India, late 19th century, late 1800s, so about 10 million Indians starved to death, and this was part of the English governance of India, and part of this is related to the opium trade war, but also it had to do with England extracting resources and shipping those back to England. So we can think about not just Ukraine in 1921, 1922, but also Ukraine in 1929 to 1933. So Stalin seized peasant land, trying to collectivize the agricultural systems. I'm not sure if any of you have seen collective farms or heard about collective farms under the Soviet structure, but they didn't work very well. I've seen several collective farms in post-Soviet Russia. It's interesting because in the late 1920s, early 1930s, the Ukrainian peasants resisted the collectivization because they were still reeling from the 1921 famine that was imposed by Stalin. So to punish the Ukrainian defiance, the Soviets took the grain and shipped the grain to Russia out of Ukraine. So some of you may be familiar with this term, the Holodomor, that took place in this area. So it's interesting when you take a look at the statistics. A child born in 1932 in rural Ukraine had a life expectancy of less than 7 years. So 8 million Ukrainians died from 1929 to 1933. Food has been weaponized throughout all of history when we think about sieges around cities. When Hitler was attacking Russia during World War II, he surrounded many of the cities, or his armies surrounded many of the cities and laid siege to the cities. And for example, he had Leningrad surrounded for over 900 days, and over 1 million people died because of starvation. So the examples go on. Food is one of the first things. Food and water are easy targets to use when you're trying to defeat an enemy. So unfortunately, as we progress in our civilizations, do we really learn the lessons of history? And I would promote the idea that perhaps not as much as we think we do. So I will post some of these links for these articles in our show notes. I'm hoping that our next episode is actually going to be more optimistic and more progressive in terms of what we are doing to use grain to feed the world. And hopefully this situation between Russia and Ukraine will end sometime soon so that we can get on with the business of feeding people instead of starving people. So with that, thank you for listening. I hope you have a great rest of your day, and tune in again in a couple of weeks for hopefully something more positive. Have a great day, everyone. The